So are you competitive with each other?
I think we're getting less competitive.
Yeah, we pull out all the stops sometimes. No, it's good to be competitive with each other. We're driven by each other. Janelle inspires me, and I don't know if I inspire you. I frustrate you.
Hello, I'm Charlotte Ricker. You're listening to Free Reign Podcast.
It's a glorious sunny day. I'm out walking my dog. I'm walking dog number two. This is a new addition to the Ricker family, Sydney. He's only 7 months old. He's a German wirehead pointer, and he's very gorgeous. I should be riding, but my horse is out of action again. It's been quite a year, really. It's quite a tough year, just constant problems. Latest incident, 2 months off due to lameness. She's now slowly coming back into work, but it means that today I am walking instead of riding. But it's still not bad. I'm on Wimbledon Common, and it's really rather gorgeous. So, latest episode of Free Reign, I went to meet Janelle and Tim Price in their gorgeous thatched cottage. In case you didn't know, they are the most successful eventing couple in the world. Tim is currently ranked third in the FAI rankings, and Janelle is just behind him in fourth, which I'm sure slightly annoys her that she's just behind him. She's very competitive. I love Janelle. It's been quite a year for them. Janelle won badminton and Le Moulin, and Tim won Burley. I spoke to them just after Janelle won badminton, which is an amazing achievement in its own right, but it was only 10 months after giving birth to their first baby, Otis. And we speak about how life has changed since having a very cute little boy. We also speak about how they met. We talk about their life in New Zealand, things that they miss from back home. And we spoke about how they differ as riders, and I love how candid they are, and how much respect they've got for each other, because obviously they're a married couple, they're a mum and dad, but they're also professionals at the top of their sport, and they are able to sort of disassociate, I think, almost their relationship from their professional relationship. And it's incredible seeing how they've achieved that, and I love the way they spoke about each other, and I say the respect they have for each other and the differences that they have. It was really interesting. Tim speaks about having fire in his belly after Janelle won badminton, and it certainly worked because he went on to win Burley. So yeah, they are very competitive, but they're just great fun. They're lovely people, and I hope you enjoy the podcast as much as I enjoyed making it. So enough of me, let's hear it from the king and queen of eventing.
I know you were friends, weren't you, for a while before you got together?
Yeah, we probably met, well, we would have been like 16, 17 when we very first met. So I was from the very top of the South Island, and Tim's from Christchurch area, which is about 5 hours south.
Okay.
But like I said, where I am is sort of more beachy rather than built for equestrian. So as I was starting to get more competitive, I started to travel to Christchurch a little bit.
Yeah.
And compete down there, and that is when I met Tim. So yeah, must
have
been
16,
17.
Through
horses.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a well-used equestrian facility where I'm from, Christchurch, and Janelle made the big trip down with her horse trailer, her one horse in the back, and I think that's where I first spotted her. As you know, it's important in little places that you look further afield than just your local area for some young talent, and Janelle was someone we hadn't seen before.
So you obviously liked her straight away, but you were friends first, yeah?
Yeah, we were. We were good friends for a few years, actually.
I mean, I think we sort of briefly entertained the idea, but then, just became friends for about, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, having too much fun, having a blast, you know, mucking about and...
How had you been then?
When we got together, I was 21. Okay. So Tim would have been 22, I guess.
So, you met when you were much younger than that?
16, 17.
Wow, okay, so really young.
But we became very good mates. You know, we lived together for a while in the North Island when we were sort of on tour. Again, because, you know, the South Island is much less equestrian than the North Island.
Sure,
so we used to travel to the North Island twice a year. And we used to go on convoy a lot. We'd both have a truck full of horses and, we'd just spent a lot of time riding and competing and hanging out, and we did that for years and years.
because you don't come from a horsey background, do you?
No, not at all. You're so bizarre why I got onto horses.
You've got siblings that don't ride, is that right?
I'm the youngest of four, and no equestrian in the family whatsoever. They're not even competitive people. Do you mean they're really quite soft and caring people, sort of not hard-nosed.
So how do they produce this, sort of feisty competitor?
I don't know. I mean, my mum was scared of animals. We were allowed budgies and goldfish when we were growing up.
Wow.
And my dad just didn't like them. We used to throw stones at the horses that came down the road and rode on his grass verge. We used to throw stones at them. So
at what point did you suddenly realise that you liked horses? How did you find out that you liked horses?
I just always had a weird desire. I don't know why. And it started pretty simple. I used to write to Santa Claus every year and ask for a pony. And every year I got a little plastic one.
And at what point did you get a real one?
Well, I friended someone that had a couple of ponies, and I was sort of allowed to go and ride one day a week for a start, and eventually one day came 3 days and three became 5 days. And after a couple of years, my mum gave in and I leased her pony.
And what about the eventing side of it? Because that's quite a step up from just having a pony to becoming an event rider.
Yeah, well, for years, I mean, I did Pony Club, the local Pony Club, and the only shows, because we didn't have transport or anything, so the only shows I did were the ones I could ride to. So where I lived, luckily, wasn't that big a place. And, you know, I'd sort of do the local A&P show, agricultural and pastoral show, every year. There was a one-day event, and then Pony Club shows, and that's, you know, I'd ride to these shows and tie them up to a fence, ride them all day, and then ride them home again.
Very much jack of all trades in New Zealand. So you're talking about doing showing, you're talking about doing some show jumping, and then one day events as a horse trial. So, you know,
I guess good preparation for venting if you're doing a bit of everything.
Yeah, for sure.
So it wouldn't have been till I was probably, my mum sort of finally gave in, I think when I was 14, she bought me a horse and a horse to event.
What does she think of you now?
Oh, she's, you know, she'd be my number one supporter now. She obviously can't do anything with the horses. She's pretty useless. But she's hugely supportive. And
She's learnt the game now. For the first part, I remember she was on the sidelines and professed to know nothing. Now she asks a little bit, oh, so that horse is going good now, isn't it? Or he's a bit spooky at water, isn't he? You know, so she does.
I mean, she knows all the horses and everything, but, you know, if you'd asked her to pick out a foot, she wouldn't be able to or anything.
And so does she come to England much to watch and things?
Yeah, so she comes over. She's actually English, my mother, which is how we happen to be here.
That's confused me, because I thought you guys moved here together when you got together.
Yeah, we did. So my mum was born in England, but she immigrated. Her family immigrated when she was like 7 years old.
Right. Okay.
So, we're definitely, absolutely, 100% New Zealanders. We're born and bred New Zealand. It's just your mum.
It's okay. I wasn't accusing you of being British. Don't worry. Don't want to insult you.
Just
make that really clear. When you first came here, how tough was it when you first came here trying to set up?
Very tough, but we were naive, so it didn't seem, you know, as difficult as retrospectively it does look to us, as well as us looking at other youngsters or young people coming over and doing the same thing. No money, that was a big problem. and no owners and, you know, all that sort of thing that takes years to get established. It was difficult, but it just meant one thing: we had to put our heads down and our bums up and just get on with it and make things work.
Did you bring horses over with you?
Yeah, we started the very first trip. We came with one each to go to Burley, and that was sort of to make a bid for Athens Olympics. And then once we'd decided to move permanently, we bought another, I think I bought two horses and Tim bought three. So we had sort of a group of six horses that we owned 100% ourselves, yeah. because in New Zealand you own everything.
Right.
You know, I would have been running a team of probably 10 horses in New Zealand. Tim would have been bigger, probably 15 horses.
And you own them all?
You own every single horse.
Does sponsorship not exist
anymore? No.
Oh, yeah, well, you had feed sponsor. Yeah. And
if we got maybe more established in New Zealand, you know, right. we were early career. But you still wouldn't have a a lineup of owners and things. You'll have someone that supports you by giving you a horse, or you know, but not actually the way that it's structured.
It's just a very different game over there.
Wow, so that's tough. So you bought, you had to find the money to buy those horses.
Well, no, because you bought them off the track. Nearly everything was bought off the. Everything I had would have been bought off the track. Yeah. So you pay probably $2,000 or $3,000.
Right.
Tim's family were breeders, so you would have had a mix of.
Yeah, but that mine were off the track. Essentially, the ones that came over.
Because you've got a horsey background, haven't you?
Yeah, I grew up with horses all around me and things. So you know, there was an abundance of horses, not necessarily the ones that were going to be useful for the job of eventing, but definitely gave me a good foundation to the world.
And so you produce your own horses?
Yeah, we used to buy them off the track, produce them and sell them. And, you know, at that time, I guess we were very lucky. The New Zealand thoroughbred was hugely fashionable.
Yeah.
And we could sell horses to America like hotcakes.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't really need to be that proven. I mean, they were lovely horses that are ready to go, but they were just very in demand. So
good market.
We still had to work at selling horses.
Yeah, absolutely. But that was our livelihood, was producing and selling. Mm, yeah. And your parents in New Zealand, everybody owns 20 acres of land. You know, sort of my mum did. Tim's family had a bit of land. And that's sort of how young people operate, really.
So was it a really good basis for you, good training, do you think, to now? Because I'm assuming you still produce and buy and sell now?
Absolutely.
I mean, we don't so much now.
Well, no, as far as it being a good base, it absolutely was, because, you know, we were able to ride many different horses, and often quite difficult, quite flighty, you know, with issues from the racing days and things. But also you had to learn to be quite cutthroat and, you know, learn how to, you know, let go of one that wasn't right for the job, or push the one that you could see the talent in, and all the while just churning horses through and through. And I think that really set us up as being very versatile riders without us really knowing it at the time.
So you don't produce, I mean, that seems to me how so many riders make their money.
Back to current day, we don't produce. Like, there was many years in England that we did produce horses and had to sell everything just to make ends meet. But then there came a point in the road where we had a decision to make between ourselves, that we want to go either down the route of trying to make it to the top of this game or, you know, just duck and dive and continue to do things that might take our eye off that that target.
So is that about having good owners, basically, in that sense?
Yeah, so I think, you know, basically it was when the balance started to change. I think at one point we had 10 horses in England that we owned ourselves, and then we slowly but surely started transferring that to... We owned 8 and had 2 owners, and, you know, until such time that the balance changed.
I think, there's almost been like three phases to it. The initial phase, like we've just alluded to, with owning a lot of the horses, to then having owners come on board, to then saying to those owners or to future owners, we're in this to take them all the way. I'm afraid if you're in it to sell the horse, then we're probably not the riders for you.
Okay, sure.
I mean, we have 1 or 2 ourselves, but ultimately we try and keep the focus on producing horses to the best of their ability.
For yourself.
Which is hopefully at the top end of the game.
Yeah, and you know, you really favour mares, don't you?
Well, not really by choice.
It just worked out like that.
It's just worked out like that. I mean, again, we used to almost have a policy of no mares. We didn't have a single mare on the place.
It's funny
because
Mark Todd, I was just speaking to, was saying that the mares were really unpopular, unfashionable, and now they're getting more popular.
Yeah, I just happened to be sent 1 or 2. I guess Fairy D'Animo was probably the start of it. I got sent her as a 6-year-old, so that's sort of 7 years ago now.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, she's hot and feisty and... You know, I had some good results with her, and you're seen to ride that type and have some success with it. So then that's sort of what gets sent to you, and suddenly you've
got
a whole yard.
Yes, I guess it's a bit like an actor. You get a certain role, and you get typecast. And people think that's you. It's like, that's not me. It's just that's why I keep getting stuff. So would you actually rather get a nice steady gelding?
No, I think now that I'm so absorbed in it that... Yeah,
in actual fact, she does suit these mirrors, but it wasn't because you went and sought them out.
I think they found me, and then it's just how it's ended
but
up.
But if you, I mean, Tim, would you say, I think when I've been to you guys in the past, that you're more laid back? And that,
For sure.
Yeah. So in a way, you might think that your personality wouldn't suit that type. You might be better off, you know, like a cool, calm, laid back kind of person, better off with the feisty ones. But obviously it works for you that you're, well, if you've got quite a hot seat, you're quite a hot rider.
I didn't think so.
Can I answer this question?
Yeah.
So Janelle was like very black and white, clean cut with, you know, she's a technician when it comes to riding. So she's very, very clear with what she's asking. And it's a matter of the horses coming into that channel rather than Janelle meeting the horse in their channel. So I think where that appeals to the mares, the feisty mares in particular, is that ultimately Janelle wins the day. So that... You know, they actually know what's right and what's wrong. And if they're playing up and doing the wrong thing, they know they're doing the wrong thing. So it's only a matter of time before they fall into line.
Right.
And when that happens, that's when the magic starts to occur and where Janelle can get that super tune out of those feisty, super talented types of mares.
So have you had a mare there? Because then they say, you know, you ask a mare, you tell a gelding, you discuss it with a stallion.
Absolutely.
So have you had some mares where it hasn't worked, that it's been a clash?
I think I've had my first one last week. I've just given one of my good mares to Tim, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't working?
Yeah, she's a big... I mean, I bought her a couple of years ago, but she's grown a lot. She's a really big mare now. And, Tim rode her last year while I was pregnant and had some really good success on her.
Which mare is that?
A Skona, a big grey mare, and sort of watching him ride her, it looked right, and I sort of thought I might struggle getting back on board this year, and I have. She's outwitted me, so that's probably the first time I've had to
admit. Quite tough?
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. But at the end of the day, we're here to do the right job, and if I'm not the person to do that job, then I'm not about to stand in the way of the horse.
The thing is, Tim asked for you, you can answer for him. What kind of rider is he? What kind of horse does he suit best? How would you describe his style?
He can ride a variety of horses, is his real skill and talent, I think. And, he's a bit like Toddy in the sense that he can ride a tiny horse or he can ride a ginormous horse. He wouldn't be the biggest in stature, but he can sit heavy or he can sit light. He can be strong or he can be incredibly soft. I think where he's come on in the last couple of years and the success is reflected is he's probably had to learn to be more of a competitor, more of a showman in the dressage.
In what way do you mean? What way was he not a competitor before?
Maybe in the, the discipline perhaps of the training. Sometimes...
too laid back or...?
Well, he is a horseman at heart, and sometimes perhaps that might come at the price of being totally focused on getting an eight. Do you know what I mean?
And yes.
There is a point, I guess, where the competitor has to supersede the horseman to really get the best in the ring.
I think pretty much hitting the nail on the head there. But I also think that it's just the journey of learning how to ride a horse properly for me, and just call me a slow learner, but the way of riding a horse properly on the flat and things is actually a true reflection of horsemanship. It is actually being very clear, and it's showing just how finely tuned that communication is between horse and rider, and how you can display it here now exactly as you need to in a test. But it's just the way that the world goes, and it's just I've done a lot of horsemanship based work in my career, be it breaking in horses and making money through all that side of things, riding tricky ones or whatever. But then there's come a point where I've been able to really focus on the skill and precision of riding properly for competition.
And I think too, we look at the horses now, like classic Moe or Ringwood Skyboy are good examples. They're 15 years old this year, but they're getting better. And it's quite ridiculous to say they physically look better, and they're still improving. And I think, we're probably deemed to be a little on the older side for, we're certainly not young riders anymore, but
I've just been with Mark Todd, you know.
He's at least double our age, isn't he?
But yeah, we are, you know, we're still hopefully improving.
Yeah, that's what I think is amazing about equestrian sport is, well, two things. It's the age thing, is you definitely do get better with age. Mm. And also the gender thing. I love the fact that what other sport is there in the world where you're completely competing on equal ground?
It's very healthy, isn't it?
It's amazing. Mm. It's just fantastic. And I just feel like my daughter's 10 now, and I think it's an amazing thing for her to be involved in. Really empowering.
Yeah.
There's no, like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You're just a girl.
Yeah, when you see someone like Janelle winning something like badminton, it must be great for people like your daughter.
It's just amazing. I love
it. So it's like, we can actually do that.
Exactly.
She just beat all those boys. You know? Exactly. So it's going
to
be great.
You know, to get on the sports pages, it's so male dominated. And now it's women are starting to play football, which is, in a way, it's great, but it's a bit like, they're having to do a male sport in order to compete in order to get noticed. And I think actually, wouldn't it be just great if female sport got more attention?
Yeah.
And what I love about equestrian sport is, you know, we watched badminton, we watched you win, and it was like, you know, there's Oliver Townend and there's Janelle, you know, and there's no difference, you know, other than the fact that you won.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing. I think it's great. It's
it's very good sport like that.
I think we're getting less competitive, maybe.
We pull out all the stops sometimes. It's good to be competitive with each other. We're driven by each other. Janelle inspires me, and I don't know if she inspires me. I frustrate you. I think we're very lucky because, and often it's other riders that make us aware of that when they say, you're so lucky to be on an arena with another top rider on a daily basis. And then I think, actually, you know what? I am, because you're continuously being reminded or checked out on something or called out on something. Mm. So,
but that equally could also...
So that's a kind of competitive edge, I suppose.
It is, but that could also cause problems, couldn't it? Because husband and wife, often if you then try, like, you know, chance of teaching someone to drive or something, it's a recipe for disaster. So there could be a clash, couldn't there?
Yeah.
And professionalism.
That's where I'm saying, I think, I think we're much better now. I think even, you know, in the younger years, before we'd had sort of the success we were, you know, seeking, we were still unsure of our own identity a little bit. Whereas I think now Tim believes in his system, I believe in my system. And even though our systems are very much one, we don't have to do exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's been a lot better since we've established that. And perhaps that comes with confidence, you know, after you've performed and got some results. So I do think it's been, you know, it's got easier, you know, the last few years.
And a little bit, sort of a little bit of respect for each other, even though we've always had respect.
Mm.
But,
mm.
you know, your respect is different to you and vice versa. So there's that. But no, competitively, it's fun. It's, you know, it's fun to go out and try and beat Janelle, and definitely she's got one up on me this year. So
she has, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say. So. So that's just hopefully little fire under me, and you know, we'll get her down the track. Starting this weekend in an open novice section at West Wilts, we've got a little bit of a duel coming up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem. To be a competitive person, you either are or you aren't. You don't just put it to bed. So he thinks he's a better driver. I believe I am definitely the better driver. And yeah. It will be a contest come open novice this Wilt Sunday.
But also, you've got Lumen coming up.
Yep, Le Moulin for Janelle. I'm not going, sadly. My horse has got a little injury.
No, because that was your first four-star win. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Yeah.
First and only, unfortunately.
A few years ago, 2014,
I won that on Wesco. And Janelle came close to winning it 2 years later. Was it 2 years? It came second, didn't you, by 0.1. She's taking the same, that was with Fairy Dynamo, so Janelle's back there with the same mare, and she's on quite good form, touch wood.
Fantastic.
So, yeah. But
sadly, Tim, you won't be there.
No, it's okay. I've been away for the last 5 weeks, so I'll be home stirring up the pot there.
And so how's life changed since having Otis?
Look, he certainly enhances, you know, every day he enhances, for sure. I don't think it's changed too much. We just have to be a little bit more organised to ensure that, you know, he stays with us and he's happy and looked after. But we've tried to sort of resume as much as normal, yeah. And, you know, hopefully that's a fun lifestyle for a little boy.
And also, obviously, again, it's quite different because there's not the sort of the classic gender roles, because you're both competing at the same level, doing the same job. There was no reason at all why, Janelle, you should be taking a back seat. Yeah. And, you know, there isn't. So is it harder to juggle because both of you are doing the same thing? Or
no, I think it's probably easier and it's more healthy because, you know, Dad's not in London for the week and comes home to get reacquainted on a Friday night. We're both there and...
So is it 50-50?
Yeah,
yeah,
very much. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of nice because we both come home at the end of the day and haven't seen them all day and are both really keen to bath them or do dinner time or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's not sort of like I've had them all day, so Tim comes home and I'm handing them over saying, here, have them.
Yeah.
You know, but we are reliant on help and we're very lucky. We've got a fantastic girl
that has
started in January with us. And
she's very much part of the team. Like you say, we come home, but there's often days where he's at the yard for a good couple of hours in the middle of the day with Harriet.
Well, nearly every day.
Yeah.
So she comes to the yard with him.
She has a horse. She just rides up to the lower levels, but, you know, we encourage her to come to the yard. He has a bed there and he sort of does his midday sleep normally while she rides her horse. And and that's been a really positive way of integrating her into the team. You know, we have a crew of sort of 6 full-time staff, so we want her to be a part of that as well.
Yeah.
And it's been really successful, actually.
Right? Yes.
And I don't want to aim this all at you, Janelle, because he's both your child, but obviously you're the one that physically carried him and gave birth, and that does take its toll. So, I mean, clearly it hasn't affected your riding after just winning badminton. So how hard was it? Was it hard? Because you were riding right up until the end, weren't you? And back in the saddle very quickly after.
Yeah, I rode all the way through, I think sensibly. You know, I only rode sort of 3 horses throughout the pregnancy and they were my, you know, top-end horses. So they were older and, you know, I knew them inside out. Yeah, physically it was fine. Mentally, I think I struggled more. I struggled sort of not having a purpose. I know he was my purpose, but...
No, so you mean... You struggled when you weren't competing and riding.
Yeah. And I think that it was the first time in my life I sort of didn't have an immediate objective or something I was, you know, striving towards. So
it just sounded absurd at the time when she was coming with these complaints when she was very significantly pregnant. It was like, yes, you do actually have a job on your plate to do.
But it is hard.
It wasn't satisfying her desires.
Yeah, it was very unfulfilling.
Yes.
Pregnancy.
just lying around being large.
And, you know, I sort of thought I'd have all this time on my hands to do new or different things, but it didn't work out like that at all. I ended up teaching and overseeing the staff on the younger horses or just doing menial jobs that I really didn't want to be doing.
And so, Tim had to take over the riding
and Tim
horses.
Was flat out, and I had to obviously try and be as supportive as possible because he was working from dawn till dusk and he had a huge load on his plate and a lot of advanced horses, so they all deserve due attention. So, yeah, basically the short version is I'm not designed to be a housewife.
And so mentally, how did you feel getting back? How did you feel getting back into it? And, you know, like, at what point do you know I'm going to do badminton? Or did you always know you're going to do badminton?
Well, I'd set Po as my real task. And rightly or wrongly, you know, it was, 9 weeks after he was born. And I'm happy I did it. You know, I only finished 10th and I was really disappointed at the time to have finished 10th. I do think it set me up for this year. You know, it sort of eradicated any thing in my head, whether, you know, you just have too much more time than you used to think about how well you're going to come back, how you're going to feel. And I think because I just had that, again, a single-track mind that I was going to go to Po no matter what.
Yeah.
And it was really good just to get back in the game and get a 4-star under my belt. I'm sure that was pivotal in my badminton preparation.
Yeah, and badminton, I mean, she didn't make it easy for you, did she, in the show jumping? She rattled quite a few poles. I was watching my son, and he was going, she hit that one, and she hit 8 fences. I was like, just, you know, it was so stressful. Because she can be a bit careless in show jumping, can't she? Is that right?
I wouldn't describe her as careless. She is essentially a careful jumper. But she's a bit unorthodox in her style. And then add to that, you know, 11 minutes of flat out galloping the day before. Yeah. she isn't a reliable clear iron jumper on the last day. I mean, I think she's had one down at sort of her last probably 3 years of three-day events. So,
So good. No,
you know, not terrible. No, but not certainly I hadn't jumped a clear iron. I think Equi Ratings like to remind me since 2000 and...
The last eight.
14 or something.
No, Equi Ratings.
I think the other thing with that mare is she has that unorthodox style. So our eye is so used to it because we, you know, we take her down to Spain. We've seen her jump.
Yeah, because you did the Sunshine Tour, didn't you?
Yeah.
We've seen her jump hundreds of jumps. And the way she jumps is she gets up in the air, she gives it 100%. And it doesn't look that pretty. And often there's a little tap. And that's just how she goes about the business of show jumping. So, you know, when she was feeling her way around a little bit at Badminton, I was feeling quite confident that she was jumping well.
Because you know that's her style.
Yeah, but to people that weren't used to viewing her, that I think they were like, ooh.
Oh, I definitely put a heart in my mouth, yes, yeah.
I mean, she wouldn't normally rub it quite as many, but...
No, she
but yeah, she is... A bit of an individual.
Yeah, and amazing. It must just be... are you still kind of, you know, is it just back to business? Are you over it now? You know, do you still kind of wake up in the morning and think, yes?
No, I don't, sadly. It feels like a very long time ago. And, you know, when you enter badminton, you certainly don't plan on winning it. So you'll schedule the week after. Badminton is really sort of the start of a crazy run.
Yeah.
You know, we sort of go to... I think we had 15 at Aston Le Wolves on the Wednesday, Thursday. Then we're up at Chatsworth on the weekend. So you really don't have a huge amount of time to indulge in the success. But, you know, that's part of the job. And many people have won badminton before me. And you just have to, get on. Maybe in November we'll have a few lunches and I might
finally
sink
take
in.
It in. Yeah. Because Tim, you show jumped at first, didn't you?
Back in the old days. No, I show jumped in New Zealand, and it was more just doing what was available in the country.
Nearly swayed to jumping, didn't you?
Yeah, but New Zealand just didn't quite have the infrastructure for show jumping, and you know, that maybe that was something that needed a bit more of a proper driving force behind me to put me into a yard in Belgium or something like that with a couple of nice horses. But that just wasn't what was happening at the time. So the Kiwi Thoroughbreds and these famous eventers over in England that we heard of, Vaughan Jeffress and Blythe Tade and Mark someone, they sort of dangled the carrot to change across to eventing.
So they kind of inspired you to come over to here?
Yeah, very much.
Yep, we used to watch them at the wrong time of the day, you know, jumping. I still remember it's Todd for two and two for Todd as he jumped through the last jump at Seoul Olympics, and all those things really inspired us, and just how formidable that they appeared to be, and they certainly were. So yeah, away we went chasing that.
And what do you miss most about New Zealand?
Well, family, obviously, and I think the country. It's a beautiful country,
really,
and
beautiful.
The lifestyle that the country provides. Do you know what I mean? Like I said, I was brought up, you know, by the sea, so as a child, you know, we were on boats, fishing, swimming in the river. You know, my pony paddock, you would open the gate, walk across the road onto the beach. So, you know, I was always bareback swimming or, you know, taking a picnic up the river and swimming some more.
Yeah.
It's just, for me, it's just everything about New Zealand. It's the relaxed, easy nature of the people and all the things you just mentioned about how beautiful it is, but... You know, everyone's just so easy, like relaxed, and you can talk to anyone, a stranger, as your best mate, you know.
Five questions for you, just a bit of fun stuff. What animal would you be and why?
Oh, it's not very quick, is it? For some reason, dog springs to mind, just because I think a dog really is man's best friend and
have a good life.
Yeah, if you have we've been lucky to have a very, very special dog who's no longer with us. He died a year ago, but
you can never be him, Janelle.
I know, but because of him,
I would be a magpie. That's
a thief. You know.
Yeah,
thief.
I was going to say that, and for stealing things.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, New Zealand. I just always, as a kid, used to admire the way their acrobatics. They were awesome. We had a pet one called Maggie.
Did you?
Wasn't a thief.
That's quite not very original.
No. It's like Percy the possum as well. We had a pet one.
You'd be a gazelle or something.
I don't know what a gazelle is.
Like leggy and
They're like deer.
Yeah. I just like to be a real nimble bird, but not too small that your life is a bit short and a bit, you know, on the...
Tim's like a freak of an athlete. Do you know what I mean? Like, I run a lot and go to the gym.
This has got nothing to do with the animal I'm going to be.
Well, you know, but...
In what way is he a freak of an athlete?
Well, so like, yeah, I do all this stuff all the time. He won't do anything for 5 years. He'd come...
5 years?
For a run with me. Exaggeration. He'd kick my ass, you know.
No, really? So just, he could just a natural athlete?
Yeah, he could go out and probably win a 10K race. He's a bit of a freak. So. So back to that's what I'm saying. For an animal, you'd have to be like something
same
very...
more athletic.
Yeah, with endurance about it.
A fast magpie, that's athletic.
But yeah, do you know, I get the feeling that you seem, you know, you're tenacious, aren't you? I think of a dog as too laid back, no?
Yeah, probably.
So do you think it's interesting saying that about Tim, that do you feel like he's got more natural talent?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Really?
He's got it, yeah, definitely. I'm more taught. I've learnt the trade, and that's, you know, why we, you know, he'll say I'm more of a technician.
Yes.
You know, whereas he's.
I think that gets. You know, you go around on that quite a bit as far as you. I think she's a very natural rider, actually. You know, the way that you go cross country is not taught. That's through a whole lot of experience behind someone that's very naturally talented at that job of galloping to a fence and knowing what balances what for different jobs, and that's how you get away with going as quick as you do. It's not just because your mare's quick, it's because you know how to ride a horse at speed.
Now questions that people sent in for me. Some people via the podcast and some people also by, there's a really good Facebook forum called Twitter Eventing, which is for amateur eventers, and it's a really good supportive group. And some people sent me some questions. Janelle, it's to you from Nicola James. You've been an absolute machine remaining in the saddle throughout a pregnancy and back to competition so soon. What tips does she have? Everyone says getting off and on the horse gets harder. How did you get on and off when you were that pregnant?
We have a very good mounting block, which we use every day of the week. So that was the same. I did find, getting off, you had to have a bit of a technique to get off. I think I had to put the leg over, keep the leg, your near side leg, in the stirrup, do you know what I mean, until you're over and then drop down. But no, I was very lucky. I didn't find it too uncomfortable. I still rode on a dressage saddle most of the way through.
Didn't need to wee permanently. That's what stopped me, right?
Yes,
that's what
I
gave up. I just had to get off. I just got a hacking. I had to get off and have a wee.
Yeah. Between each horse, I'd definitely have to have a loo break.
You were going to the toilet
a lot. Yeah, that frustrated me a lot. But no, I think just keeping fit and you know, just normal. Just trying to remain normal.
She also asked what jobbers you wore. It's quite specific. I don't suppose there's pregnancy jobbers, is there?
That's a good question, because I couldn't find any pregnancy jobbers.
Well, there's a gap in the market.
So then I started wearing Tim's, but they were too baggy on my legs. I couldn't get the boots done up. And in the end, I settled. I actually rode in running pants and gym pants, I found was the best thing.
You could create Janelle Price pregnancy.
Well, I did wonder about that, but I decided that the vast majority of pregnant women probably don't ride as much as I did or as long as I did. So I'm not sure it's going to make me $1 million.
No, and also there might be all sorts of like safety regulations that encourage women to ride.
Exactly, so.
Yeah, okay, stupid. Sorry. And she also wants to know, have you got all your horses back?
Oh, no, that was a bit of a sore point. But no, I had to extend the lease on one for Tim Sekatinka, as it was one of the mares that he rode for me last year. And they obviously struck a very good relationship, and we felt that she could be a candidate for the World Equestrian Games this coming September. Mm. And with me having sort of my two prominent mares, she was probably more valuable to him at this point. So he's kept her for the moment, and she's going really well.
Yeah. Sophie Newson, who's just 16 years old, has said she has very limited funds and can't get out much, but her dream is to event at the top level. Obviously, I know I won't be able to get there on my own funds. How do you make your way being a rider? Through being a groom? Or what's the best place to start?
16 years old, I think the best thing for Sophie to do is to go and have an experience at a yard, like in her holidays. Come along to someone's, you know, a proper professional yard, not just someone that's in the that's focused on a different part of the sport, but someone that's at the top of their game. And just by, you know, observing and being part of that system and part of that, that environment will show her what's required, if it's really what she wants, and, you know, give her a bit of insight as to what she needs to do to get there.
And I think, you know, the most important thing is don't let money be a limiting factor. You know, I don't think there's any really successful people that have let money stop them from doing what they want to do. If there's a will, there's a way. You will find a way if you want it badly enough.
Great, that's great. Sarah Taylor wants to know, do you ever get nervous? And if so, how do you manage your nerves?
Through the belief in your preparation is what I found the key to my nerves. And also realising that nerves are your friend because they mean that you want it, and to embrace that aspect of nerves.
Try and make it positive rather than seeing nerves as a negative thing. It's like it's an energy, isn't it?
It's an energy. And so as soon as you, not as soon as, but the more you can embrace that, the better it works for you and comes through in the right way, not in a blocking way.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, like, Janelle, for example, you know, talking about your badminton, when you're going in, did you have one fence in hand? Is that right?
We didn't tell her that. Yeah. I mean,
I did. I think she might have known.
I had a vague idea that I did have one in hand, but it just wasn't even it wasn't part of the equation. You know, come Saturday night, I knew I had to jump a clear round. There were good horses behind me. The scores were tight. And that was simply my focus was going to jump a clear round.
And how do you maintain that focus when, how do you not fall apart? How do you maintain that focus and just ride to your best ability? Is it just practice?
Well, no, it's not because I've never been in that position before. It was a first time for me going in last. Yes, I've been in pressure situations, but that one is quite unique. I'm sure you do get better at it as you go. But I think for me, I just really tried to stay focused on what my job was, and that was to jump one fence after the next.
Yeah.
We put in a huge amount of hours training with, you know, great people. We're very lucky to work with some of the world's best. And, you know, like Tim says, you've got to have faith in your preparation and your system. And yourself to go and execute that job that you can do.
Yeah,
it is indeed. And, you know, the more that you can do in the background, the consistency of that so that you really understand where you're at and where your horse is at, then you, in the moment you can actually afford yourself to relax just that little bit. And that's what allows you to ride the way you need to, I find, anyway. You know, all the work's done. You're in the ring, the job's done, waiting for the bell. Bell goes, go jump number one and off you go.
And do you enjoy it, or do you enjoy it retrospectively?
Yeah, I don't think you enjoy it at the time. It's
a funny thing, isn't it? Cause it's true. Sometimes you think, why do I do it if I don't enjoy it? But the cross country, maybe. You must have moments of that when you're...
Well, you enjoy nailing something. Do you know what I mean? You've just jumped through a difficult combination. You're like, that was pretty cool. But straight away on with the next job.
Yes.
I always sort of think of it a bit like a checklist. You know, you're just ticking the boxes as you go through, whether it be the show jumping or the cross country or even the dressage. You know, there'll be sort of danger zones, I guess, for some of my hot ones. Mm-hmm. You know, a sort of certain area of the test where you might be vulnerable. So you sort of tick that off and go, oh, sweet, I got through that part and on with the next. So I think the real sort of jubilation is probably after it's over.
Yes.
Yeah. And look, there's the talk of going on with the next thing and everything, but at the time it was a really joyous moment for all of us. You know, it was an incredible memory that we'll never forget, you know, and there's so many people that were a part of that memory and part of that rejoicing. So it was a pretty cool thing, really.
Yeah, you can't get much better than that.
No.
Question here again about babies, and I was saying, I feel like it's a bit of a bugbear of mine. Like, Tim, how many times have you been asked about your career since having Otis? Has anyone
I've had some nights where I haven't had as much sleep as I want, and you know, I get a sore back a little bit when I have to pick him up off the ground in an awkward way, and it's tough for us men.
But the thing is, you know,
thanks for asking.
Yes, but it's the reason people are focusing on Janelle is just because you're an inspiration. It's positive. I don't want it to be like a negative, like all we're doing is talking about the fact you had a baby, because actually you're so much more than a mum. So much more than, but people do see it as an inspiration. And Michelle Chalmers wanted to know, do you have a nanny who has a little one when she's competing? Well, yes, you do, don't you?
Yep, we do have a nanny. And but like we say, she's sort of part of the crew, comes on the road with us. She's been over in Tattersalls with us last week. Yes. You know, we try and be involved as much with him as we can, but when we can, got our dressage test to prepare for, that's what our focus is.
What do you think is the most important? Lucy Council sent in loads of questions. What do you think is the most vital characteristic you need as an eventer?
I think it's different for everyone, depending on their natural sort of character traits, really. I don't think there's any one thing that is synonymous with...
Bravery,
I'd say.
Yeah, to push on through, because there's a lot of people that are a bit frustrating to watch it in the sort of lower echelons that get caught up in the daily grind, or not grind, but the struggle of getting horses going better and doing things. Sometimes you just need to keep on coming and just keep pushing through, whatever that might be, whether it's jumping a cross-country fence or getting going on the flat and things. You know, that's the best thing you can do to make progress happen.
So sort of persistence.
Yeah, and just zip it and push, zip it and keep going. And
what would you mean, zip it? Do you mean sort of what?
Don't pull up and break it down. Pull up and talk about it and think, well, maybe it's the saddle pinching the wither. And that's maybe
the ability to get the job done.
Okay, that's a good one.
Of course, I'm not saying to ride your horse in discomfort, but but often by riding them through something and just going on with the work, that develops them and gets them stronger and they get more comfortable through that. So.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, there are going to be uncomfortable moments going cross-country. You know, there'd be very few rounds at the very top level that are absolutely foot perfect. So, you have to accept that there will be moments, and it's the people that can come out the other side and keep the knot on the board, keep the horse confident and finish well, that are going to come out on top.
That's what I love about eventing, is that you sort of... it can get a bit ugly and doesn't matter, you just kick on, and I kind of quite like that about it.
Yeah.
Whereas the show jumping feels so much more precise.
Yeah.
And I find that really frightening. Yeah. Whereas cross country, you just think, I'm just gonna get round, and just kind of bloody kick on.
Yeah.
And it's obviously it makes it more dangerous, but I feel like it makes it somehow weirdly more sort of forgiving.
Yeah, in a way I think it's safer because you're doing things in a positive way, rather than in a negative like, this isn't working as you slow down. You're better off to go, this isn't working, as you push on a little bit.
But that's the bravery when you're not sure, to have the bravery to kick on and think, I'm not sure about this, but I'm just going to kick on.
And the same could be applied to dressage and show jumping, I think. Get behind the horse and ride them up the centre line and do it like you mean it, and you own that arena for the next 7 minutes, whether it's pre-novice or advanced.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. I will take that on board. The most influential figure in your career, any particular person who's had a big impact, whether directly or someone you've watched from afar?
Well, I think one of them would certainly be Toddy, actually. He's sort of been there the whole time, really, in some capacity, right from being a child, watching him win his golds, to then, we spent a little bit of time working with him before we very first came to England, and then sort of riding alongside him on a team. And
was that a bit of a dream for you guys?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ride alongside him on a team.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
And certainly something as a child you never ever thought possible. That he'd still be riding.
I know.
And B, that we made it this far. Yeah. I guess he would certainly be one for me.
Roger Federer. I've always admired that man for his sporting prowess, the way that he's
mental attitude. Yeah,
he's such a classic, with the tennis, he plays such a classic game, version of the game.
So you into tennis?
Oh, just enough to, get up and watch the big key tournaments of the year.
Yeah, I love watching. So I'm Nadal, he's Federer. So
I really
but I'm sure that's probably why, because we like another healthy competition.
Yeah, that's so funny.
And obviously they've had an amazing rivalry for so long. So.
And what about a horse, particular horse that's been... pivotal, would you say? Have you had a horse that you felt got you to the next
mine
level?
Again would be Vortex. He was a horse that I had was one of the original horses I brought over. He taught me a lot because he is a beautiful New Zealand thoroughbred in his brain but also his body. But he did everything out of desire to please me, and to he's a very honest horse like that. But sometimes it was too difficult for him. He wasn't an out and out 4-star horse, but he tried very hard. So what he taught me was the precision required in the game. And if I got him into the perfect spot and the right balance and everything else, then he would give me 110%. If I didn't have that quite mapped out for him, then things would get difficult. So he taught me about the right way to ride, but he never punished, he always only, it always only went wrong if it genuinely was wrong.
If
I was right, then he gave everything.
Yes. I think mine's a polar opposite of Tim's, but I'd probably
have to say
a horse called Mazzetto, which was the first horse I came to England with. So he was the first time I rode 4-star. He was the horse that was travelling reserve for Athens, and on the contrary to Tim, he was just an out-and-out cross-country horse. He was pretty his own way of doing things. He was Cleveland Bay, actually.
He looked like a Cleveland Bay,
and he was a big horse, but he just had a ability to look between the flags and get to the other side no matter what the conditions.
Except for that time he fell over.
Well, he still got to the other side. I just didn't stand up. But I think he taught me to be brave cross country.
Yeah.
I had such belief in him that we could just jump anything.
Mm.
And we did. He went round Badminton, Burley, Le Moulin. So I think he just got my cross country riding off in such a way that I believed it was easy. And the rest sort of then had to follow.
Fantastic. And so we talked a lot about the New Zealand thoroughbreds, but the thoroughbreds, they're not really in sport anymore, are they?
Not really.
Is that just because it's got more, the show jumping is more technical and the dressage is more competitive?
I think we've just had to shift the strength in a horse into different areas of their body is my take on it, because, it's not just about galloping now, it's about being able to hold that collection and things for the flat work, and then the jumping. You need that power, and to be able to access that power, the thoroughbreds are just got such great brains and desires and honesty about the way they tackle the job. But it's just got more versatile in a way. We need to do more things better. That's my take.
Yeah, and I think the ultimate now is something probably, 60 to 80%. Then it just has a little bit of something else to give them those attributes that Tim's talking about.
Yeah.
The ability to collect, the power to push off the floor, but still with the gallop in the heart of a thoroughbred.
Because you need the gallop, don't you? Because the times are getting faster, aren't they? Mm. Yeah.
Yep, they're getting faster. Yeah, just still. But no, it's about riding in a rhythm and training your horses to stay up in front of you for the time required and the times are achievable.
Mm.
Thoroughbred is definitely nice to sit on across country.
Yes.
That's what you want to be.
Well, that's all for this episode of Free Rein Podcast with me, Charlotte Ricker. I really hope you enjoyed listening. And if you did, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Until next time, happy riding.